You're listening to Shortwave from NPR.
Hey there, Shortwavers. Regina Barber here. And today we're going to talk about what I've been told is an incredibly cute deer.
It is stupid cute, Regina. That's the only way to describe it.
So imagine Bambi, but even the adults look like Bambi.
Wow.
When they're grown up, they're only about the size of a golden retriever.
Okay, Nate Rott, Ryan Kelman, I get it. They're cute. Can we meet them already?
Oh, much obliged.
Maybe the one thing before we leave.
Yeah.
Could you introduce us to some of your deer?
Sure.
Or just point out other ones.
So this skeptical woman you're hearing Nate talking to is Valerie Preziosi.
Introduce you.
Yeah, I don't know. So we got there, you're like, got to come meet our deer.
That's,
I was like,
all right, yeah.
I don't need to shake hooves, you know, but...
And the reason she's having to put up with our terrible jokes, well, let's be honest, Nate's terrible jokes, is because she's a huge advocate for this tiny deer that we're talking about, the key deer.
The key deer? I've never heard of that before.
Well, that's not a surprise because they only exist on the low-lying Florida Keys. They're the smallest deer species in North America. They are federally endangered with an estimated population of around 1,000.
All right, so here's deer.
Just a few of them.
Hey, guys.
There's like 8 of them in her yard. A lot of them are really used to humans, so you see them all over the place, behind the grocery store, crossing the road, near the bank, everywhere.
So this first little one here, she still has a little bit of dots. I've seen her still taking a few quick sips from her mother.
And the reason we met with Valerie Preziosi, the founder and director of the nonprofit Save Our Key Deer and other people on the Keys, is because this tiny, cute species is raising one of the biggest questions in wildlife conservation today.
Yeah, and the question is, what do we do with a species that's habitat, the only place it lives, is disappearing?
Today on the show, the story of a tiny deer.
And rising seas, we look at how climate change is raising difficult questions for the world's threatened and endangered species. I'm Nate Rott.
I'm Ryan Kelman.
And I'm Regina Barber. You're listening to Shortwave from NPR. Okay, let me start with you, Ryan. You asked what we as humans are supposed to do with species that's habitat is disappearing, like the key deer.
Right. So the key deer lives on these islands off the South Florida coast that are super low-lying, like the highest natural elevation on Big Pine Key, where most of the deer now live, only reaches about 8 feet above sea level.
Oof. And sea levels are rising.
Bingo. I mean, yeah, sea level rise is actually how the key deer were created. So regular-sized white-tailed deer grazed down Florida in the last ice age and then got stranded on the Keys when the ice melted and sea levels rose. And the Keys became keys, right? Small islands.
And the deer shrunk?
Yeah, exactly. As the habitat changed, got smaller, the deer adapted, and they evolved to be smaller. But they were able to do that because we're talking about this whole process happening over tens of thousands of years. The sea level rise was slow.
Imperceptible from a human being's perspective.
This is Chris Berg with the Nature Conservancy in the Florida Keys.
Very easy for nature and all the species to adapt to that. But then over the last century, as a result of the Industrial Revolution and burning of fossil fuels and the greenhouse effect, warming up the atmosphere, warming up the ocean, we went from that very slow to now, over the last century, about 10 inches.
Wow, 10 inches of sea level rise.
That's right, yeah.
And I imagine that's only speeding up the more the world warms.
Yep, hence the problem for the key deer.
And for the 80,000-some people, like Berg, who live on the Florida Keys. We went to a couple of places around Big Pine Key with Chris Berg.
Yeah, we saw an alligator and other Florida-type things.
There's the gator. Hey, big fella.
And the goal was to see how changes on the Keys are already occurring. So the first spot we went was this big open expanse just a couple of blocks from Berg's house between a neighborhood and the ocean.
You can't see the open ocean here, but just beyond the vegetation.
And by vegetation, do you mean like trees or mangroves?
Well, so that's what's interesting. So we were standing in this kind of dead zone, right? The vegetation he was pointing at by the ocean was mostly mangroves, you know, which, as you know, for the most part, can tolerate salt water. Behind us, higher up, were these tall, spread-out pine trees.
They're called pine rockland, which is the main habitat for key deer. And pine rockland is not as tolerant of salt water.
But between the two, where we were standing, there's this sort of transition zone.
As we look out here, you see dead pine trees. And those tall, dead, gray stumps or snags, they show you where the pine forest used to be. And that's receded by, you know, hundreds of meters at this point.
So as the saltwater climbs higher on these islands, it's like shrinking the habitat for these pine trees and the key deer.
Yeah, it's making Pine Rockland a shrinking island on a shrinking island.
Which is raising these major ethical and logistical questions for the wildlife managers tasked with keeping endangered species like the key deer alive.
You know, if you move key deer to the mainland, they'll interbreed with the regular deer. And then if it's only a matter of generations before you don't have key deer anymore. If you move key deer to the Bahamas, where there are no native land animals, the key deer will eat every plant, you know.
And cause their own.
Cause all kinds of they'll become an invasive species.
Ooh.
If you move key deer to a whole series of zoos, like, you know, people have done with pandas and, you know, you name it, endangered species, you can do that. You can keep them going, but at what cost and to what end? You know, is that really a future for the species, the subspecies?
Yeah. I mean, despite the positive role zoos can play in conservation, they can also be a tough reminder of how bad things have gotten for a whole lot of species.
Yeah, and with the deer, it becomes a question of, like, who are we actually doing that for?
Mm-hmm.
Are we putting them in zoos for the sake of the deers?
Or are we putting them in zoos for the sake of our own consciences?
Okay, so what are they going to do?
That, Regina, is a good question.
And it's one that we put to some of the folks managing habitat and species on the Florida Keys with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Agency, Nikki Colangelo and Christian Eggleston, on a very windy boat off of Big Pine Key.
It just seems like the conversation is such a new and unique space to be in for any of us, but definitely like at any government agency. Basically, those systems are built on, like, we have data. We know that if you make the speed limit 65, that we're going to have X many less traffic incidents and less deaths or whatever. But with this, it's like the data doesn't have a
right.
It's like the
solution.
No analog future.
It's kind of. It's our values. It's what do we want to do,
right?
And then so that becomes a much harder thing because there's so many different people up there, you know, like, I don't know, you know?
I struggle with that too. I mean, because the options range from giving up and letting a species go extinct to doing absolutely everything you can and putting animals in zoos or, you know, collecting plants and putting them in botanical gardens. And I mean, I don't want any species to go extinct on my watch, you know? I don't think any of us do. I mean, but is society, where is society on that, you know?
So what does she mean by that? Like, where is society on letting species go extinct?
Yeah, I mean, because the scale of the threat that climate change is posing to, you know, thousands of species, but especially endemic species, right? Plants and animals like the key deer that live in only one place. The threat is so acute that the options, as you heard, aren't really that great.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, keeping species alive can cost lots of money, and that requires a lot of political will. Species need places to live, so do humans. And in places like the Keys, where land is scarce, that can lead to conflict.
So what do you think is going to happen to the key deer?
Yeah, I honestly don't know.
Yeah, same. But, you know, that's a question we asked pretty much everybody while we were there, including a biologist who spent most of his career studying these deer before retiring from the University of Texas A&M. His name is Nova Silvi.
We're losing all of it. We've lost a lot of species. Otherwise, we'd be out here fighting dinosaurs. So We're gonna lose them sometime. We're gonna lose us sometime too.
So, you know, Silvi doesn't think this is like imminent. They'll continue to exist as long as they have the habitat, and that's a hard thing to know because sea level rise projections vary so much as you go further and further into the future.
Yeah, and I suppose it's possible they do get moved to a zoo or wildlife managers figure out some other solution?
I mean, yeah, it's possible that we take the steps necessary to stop warming the planet as a collective society, or that we find some way to suck carbon from the atmosphere and slow sea level rise altogether.
But, you know, regardless, Silvi and other people we've talked to think we need to be having this discussion about what to do with the key deer and other climate-threatened species right now.
Because in the future,
you're not going to worry about deer when you got to worry about people. That's my concern.
Yeah, at a certain point,
yeah,
the wildlife don't matter.
The wildlife don't matter. You're going to be worried about people.
Wow. That's a bit grim.
Yeah, it's unfortunately super grim. Sorry, Regina.
Yeah. However, I will say, though the situation may be desperate, I didn't hear a lot of despair from the folks down there in the Keys. I think the people who are familiar with the situation understand the influence humans have had over creating that situation. And I think what they're saying is that we really need to get together and decide how we want to exert that influence next.
Ryan, Nate, thank you so much for this reporting. It's a lot to think about.
Yeah, thank you, Regina.
Yeah, thank you.
This episode was produced by Rachel Carlson. It was edited by Sadie Babbitts and managing producer Rebecca Ramirez. Nate checked the facts, and the audio engineer was Robert Rodriguez. Beth Donovan is our senior director of programming, and Anya Grunman is our senior vice president of programming. I'm Regina Barber. Thank you for listening to Shortwave from NPR.